You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. And it is at once a privilege and an honor for me to bring before you a man well-learned and well-known for what he has been able to do with his life. And more than all those things, a good friend, a dear friend, none other than Mr. Reggie Jackson. Good morning to you, Reggie. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Earl. Thank you. Appreciate being on the show.
Because we've done this over the years, but since I've been here, it's the first time that I've had an opportunity to have you on. But I got to do this before we get into it. Reggie Jackson is an award-winning journalist, speaker, researcher, and writer with deep, comprehensive knowledge of how our country's racial hierarchy developed historically and its impact on our lives today. Reggie is a graduate of Concordia University, co-founder of Nurturing Diversity Partners, and head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum. He received the 2015 Eliminating Racism Award for from Southeastern Wisconsin, YWCA 2016 Courageous Love Award from the First Unitarian Society, the 2017 Frank P. Zeidler Public Service Award from the City of Milwaukee, the first ever Micah Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Ally for Hope Legacy Award in 2018, and on and on and on. In May 2018, he was appointed as but he's also an editor for the Milwaukee Independent. So he's a journalist. He's all of those things. But in May 2018, he was appointed as a member of the Milwaukee Equal Rights Commission by then Mayor Tom Barrett and Milwaukee Common Council. For over a decade, Reggie has been a much sought after speaker and a presenter at churches, libraries, businesses, colleges, and universities around the country. Reggie served in the U.S. Navy for 6 years, including 4 years aboard the USS Missouri. From 2018 to 2010, he taught contemporary social problems and introduction to sociological as an adjunct professor at Concordia's Mequon campus. You also was, and you've been an educator. You've been a whole lot of different things. So you don't come to the table as a novice. You come to the table as a professional. And I just wanted to make sure that people were aware. And certainly the accolades that you have received far outstripe the things that I just mentioned. I had to cut it short. But Reggie, I asked you to come on today. It's Black History Month. You've traveled the state of Wisconsin in areas where there are no black people, and had dialogue with whites across this state. Let's talk a little bit about the way you see things today, man.
Okay, yeah, great. Thanks, Earl. And, you know, I was also a public school teacher for 8 years as part of my, you know, life journey. As I started to begin to get requests to talk about, you know, things related to African-American history, and race and racism, things of that nature, and was invited to all these communities around the state. I had the opportunity for the first time in my life to travel to parts of the state that I had never been to before. So I've been to over 50 communities around the state of Wisconsin, including Wausau, Green Bay, La Crosse, Platteville, Burlington, Janesville. I mean, so many different places. I can't remember the names of all of them, but from the north to south, the east and the west of Wisconsin, I've seen parts of the state that I'd never imagined seeing before. And I've gone to those places multiple times because people like the message that I send, and they think it's credible information, and they invite me to come back multiple times. And it's been one of the greatest joys in my life to be able to kind of see the state that, you know, I moved to as a child in 1973 in a way that I'd never seen it before. And it's been a great journey, and I've appreciated, you know, all of those folks that I work with in all those different communities, engaging in conversations about really important things to them.
So
things,
Rick,
that, you know, these people don't know much about the African-American experience. So they asked me to come and, you know, share some of that with them.
So you always talk about misinformation, not so much education, but misinformation. What are we talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I tell people, Earl, I learned this many, many years ago, probably over two decades ago. I heard this African proverb that I'd never heard before, and it says, until the lion tells his story, the story of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. And what that simply means is that, you know, typically marginalized people never get to tell their version of the story, because the story is always told by someone else. And so what that, you know, told me was that there's always more than one version of every story. There's different perspectives. And so I think people have gotten a lot of information from sources that I don't think are credible sources. You can't talk about, you know, anything about the history of women, the experiences of women, without talking to women, Earl. You have to talk to women if you want to learn anything about the experience of women. And people from marginalized communities have to have a voice if you want to learn some reality, some truth about how they see the world. And it's really just about perspectives, Earl. You know, everybody has a perspective based on their lived experiences. For instance, for me, you know, I was born in a little town in Mississippi and moved to Milwaukee when I was seven back in 1973. And so I've lived in a lot of different spaces in my life, and I've learned a lot along the way. I spent 6 years in the Navy, traveling around the world and understanding that, you know, people in different countries see the United States differently than those of us who live in the United States see it. So it's really about, where do you get your information from? Is it a credible source? And I think there's so much just incredible information that is missed by people because they don't know where to find credible sources or information. And it's replaced by misinformation. You know, a lot of people depend on social media for, you know, to learn American history. And I say that, you know, social media can be used as a tool, you know, to great effect positively, but by the same token, it can be used in a negative way as well. And so people get a lot of bad information depending on social media instead of going to credible resources to learn about things. It's incredibly difficult to know the difference. If you haven't been exposed to these things, you don't know what's credible and what's not credible. You just think, well, it's on the internet. You know, it must be true, is what I hear people say. And it's like, no, that's not necessarily the way it is. And so people oftentimes will give you information to support their way of seeing the world because they want to maintain the status quo. They want to maintain, you know, life as it's always been for them. So when I hear people say stuff like, you know, make America great again, first of all, I tell people that that slogan was not created by the current president and his team. That slogan was actually stolen from Ronald Reagan when he ran for president in 1980. That was his slogan, make America great again. That's where the slogan comes from, the Reagan campaign in 1980. And so, you know, we have to understand that we have to reach outside of our normal sphere of information to get different information. And there is so much incredibly rich information available to people. If you know where to go, if you understand how to do proper research, you can find the credible information. But people aren't taught in our schools how to be researchers, how to even be really critical thinkers. We don't think about critical thinkers. And when I was a teacher, I used to tell my students all the time, listen, you have to question everything. Don't just take my word for it. Don't just take the word of, you know, the author of the textbook. Do further research. Get confirmation of things in order to believe them. Get confirmation.
So if you're just joining us, I'm joined by Mr. Reggie Jackson. He's an award-winning journalist, speaker, researcher, renowned historian who's been in demand across this nation and especially the state of Wisconsin. But he's a good friend, and I have him on. And he'll be on several times this month. So I'll let you know what dates, because we're going to cover a lot of different territory. Reggie, your thoughts about where we are today with race in this nation?
Well, Earl, I think that we're certainly moving in the wrong direction when it comes to race relations in the United States. You know, for many, many years, we thought as a nation, we were told that, you know, we were moving into what people refer to as a post-racial America, where, you know, where race would not be important moving forward. But we didn't know is at the same time we were saying we were post-racial America, that race still plays an incredibly important role in the way that we see ourselves and the way we see other people in our society. It's not something that, you know, we've gotten past. Just because of the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement did not fix America's race problem. It was not designed to fix America's race problem. And so where we are now, we're moving in the opposite direction where we're erasing some of that history, literally erasing some of that history by denying people the opportunity to hear other voices, you know, other perspectives. And that does not bode well for the future of this country.
Do you think that there'll ever be a time that race won't be a factor in this nation? Is it predicated on something that's learned, or what is the reason that people can't get beyond race as an issue?
Well, Earl, the idea of race is part of the basic fabric of this nation and how we've interacted with each other over hundreds of years. It's not something that just disappears. You know, I tell people all the time that biologically, race is not a concept. It's a social construct, but it's become so embedded in the way that we see things that I don't think it'll ever go away.
855-752-4842 is the number. I am joined by the one and only Reggie Jackson. Again, a griot, a historian, an educator, a guy who's so well known across this state and across this nation for his eloquence and his knowledge of race and the history of things. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into The Earl Ingram Show. Simply call me sweet where I hello.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. My guess is the one and only Reggie Jackson, a nationally renowned, educator and certainly historian on race and multiculturalism and a whole plethora of things dealing with, you know, the problems that we seem to not be able to overcome in this nation. You know, Reggie, you said race is a construct. And, you know, what you'll often hear is people will bring up Dr. King. And so it's a safe thing to always say, Dr. King said, don't judge a person by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And I always say to people, when you bring that up, that Dr. King was a much younger man in the early stages of his sojourn in what he was attempting to do. And by the time he was 39 and lost his life, that I Have a Dream, he had basically dismissed that and said that I can no longer support this because this is certainly not working out the way basically that I had thought. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely, Earl. I tell people that one of the most incredible things about Dr. King is that we know so little about this very important person. You know, we've all heard some version of the I Have a Dream speech, but what people don't know is that they've only listened to part of that speech, the end of that speech. I tell people all the time that if you want to learn what Dr. King's message was that day at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, you have to hear or read the entire speech that he gave that day. He didn't start the speech by talking about this dream. He started the speech by talking about how what they were celebrating, the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, which was passed in 1863. And so in 1963, he says, you know, as we look back on what's happened over the last 100 years, that Emancipation Proclamation was a promise that America made to its Black citizens that we're going to treat you differently than we've treated you before. And he said, America has defaulted on that. It's like they've written a check that came back, you know.
Void.
And I think he said something, you know, the check bounced basically.
Right.
And that's how he started the speech. And if people would read the entire speech, they would understand that Dr. King wasn't just talking about, you know, this dream that he had or, you know, judging people by the color of their skin, not the content of their character. And if you think about it, why would somebody even say you have to judge people by the content of their character instead of their skin? Because for most of American history, people had not judged Black people by the content of their character. They judged them simply by the color of their skin. So he was saying, you know, we're much more than what our skin is.
You know, Reggie, those thoughts are still relevant today. Black people are still being judged by the color of their skin. It doesn't matter, you know, people said, well, we're in a post-racial society once Barack Obama became the president. See, haven't things changed? Your thoughts?
Well, the one thing that always changes is change is constant. Change is constantly happening every day. Sometimes change is for the better. Sometimes it's for the worse. And I tell people that, you know, people consider us to be post-racial. People came up with that term after Barack Obama was elected in 2008. But I always say that that was not an indication that we're post-racial, because if you look at the election results from 2008 and 2012 as two, you know, victories in the presidential race, you'll see that in 2008 that Barack Obama received a total of 42% of the white vote. That was it, Earl, just 42%. So that means that 58% of whites who voted in an election did not want Barack Obama to be president. They voted for John McCain instead. And then when he came back in 2012, running against Mitt Romney, he received an even smaller share of the white vote. It went down to 39% from the 42%. So how can you say that we're post-racial America where 58% and then 61% of whites did not vote for Barack Obama? How can you say that that's an indication that we're post-racial because he won? The math doesn't work for me, Earl.
You know, Reggie, and while you're, you know, talking about those things, let me do this. Let me bring Tom from L.A. in quickly. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me, Earl?
Yes.
Okay. Reggie, first off, thank you for what you do. Second, you know, what I have an issue was when I was phone banking for the Democrats, for Kamala Harris, I had all these people saying, well, I got to do my research on this. And I wanted to ask, well, where are you getting your research from? Because that seems to be like this cool thing now to say, I got to do my research, when where they're going to get their research from, the web or whatever it is not a positive thing, and it's not telling them the truth. That's number one. Number two, why is it that the Democratic Party can't get on the offense. Why is it that we're always playing defense? It's like we're playing prevent defense, and all prevent defense does, as we all know in football, is that it prevents you from winning.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for the call. But our focus right now is not on Republican Democrats. We're talking about what's happening in this nation racially. And I have to say, many times Democrats aren't any better. There is not a dividing line on the racial outcomes as much in this nation as there should be. Reggie, am I off base?
You're absolutely right, Earl. And, you know, I'd just like to say to Tom, thank you for calling in. Appreciate your comments. And I can't speak for the Democratic Party. I always tell people that, listen, they have their own voice. They can speak for themselves. They can answer that question. I'm not going to try to answer that for the Democratic Party. I don't think that Republicans, Democrats, it doesn't matter. If you study the history of both parties over the course of American history, you'll see that they have converged from what they were many, many years ago. The Republican Party of Lincoln is not the Republican Party of today. The Democratic Party today is not what the Democratic Party was back during the days of Abraham Lincoln.
All right, 855-752-4842 is the number. We're going to go down a journey, historical journey, of where our nation is now, where it's headed. We're not going to get it all in today. We've got Reggie scheduled three more times for this month. So stay tuned. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842, or text us at that same number. Reggie Jackson, a good friend and just a man with accolades that don't present me enough time to really cover. But in essence, what he is a well-learned educator who has spent his time and his life evaluating the problems that exist amongst people. Really, Reggie, problems that really are nonsensical. Racism is nonsensical. To judge people solely on by the color of their skin is really kind of, insane. So if you judge somebody solely because of the color of their skin, somebody you never knew or you don't know anything about, and this is the way I've always said. So if I'm in need, I'm dying, and somebody could save my life, and that person was a different color than myself, would I say then that I don't want you to do anything to help preserve my life because of the color of your skin? It's madness, and it's predicated on what? Ignorance. What is it predicated on, Reggie?
Absolutely. It's predicated on ignorance, Earl. You know, I tell people all the time that, all of us are a product of our lived experiences and the lived experiences of all of our family that came before us, right? So for me, when I talk about, American history, I'm talking about the history that I've learned in school. When I first started going to college, I was going to college to be a history teacher in, you know, public schools. That was my passion. And so, you know, I took all of these history classes, political science classes, sociology classes in college, and I began to get a different perspective on American history from that. And that was part of my journey of learning. And, you know, anybody that knows me knows that I'm constantly reading. My wife is constantly complaining to me, Earl, that, listen, Reggie, can you buy some new bookshelves instead of buying new books? Because I probably buy a new book every week, at least every week for the last 20 plus years of my life. I've run out of space in my house for them. And so it's a constant journey of learning that we all have to go through. And we're just not enthusiastic about that type of learning. And I tell people, like, reading is great, but it's not just reading. It's the quality of what you're reading. It's not the quantity that's important. It's the quality. And so a lot of people nowadays, because they've been living in this digital age where there's access to information on the internet, they've gotten away from reading books. People don't read books the way they used to. I can remember, a bookstore in Milwaukee that I used to buy a lot of books from, the Reader's Choice bookstore along with King Drive, and how they struggled to compete against, you know, Barnes & Noble online store and then Amazon. And they eventually went out of business because they just couldn't compete. People were not coming there and buying physical books anymore. And so that was a very sad moment in my life for me when that bookstore went out of business, because they had books that you couldn't find in other places. And I realized that a lot of people have gotten away. They shied away from reading books.
Reggie, everything you want to know about this life is written in a book. I don't care what it is. That doesn't disappear because technology has come in and changed things. The books still provide a written history. There's always been people before us. And so when we say we want to take away, I was really taken aback. I went into one of Milwaukee Public Schools high schools recently, and I looked at the library, Reggie, and the books were gone. And I'm like, what happened to the books, man? Why are they taking away the books, Reggie? I know there's been this push from people, especially on the right, to take away the truth of history. But you can't wipe away the truth. Go ahead, Reggie.
Yeah, you know, I've said for many years, Earl, that you can't erase history. You know, everything that's ever happened in our society has been documented by somebody at some point. And as I've gone through this journey of learning myself, and it's a constant, never-ending journey of learning, there's always more to learn, Earl. My favorite places as a little boy were the library, right? I can remember as a little boy, I started reading at an early age, and I developed a love of reading at a very young age, but a love of reading books. My favorite books when I was in elementary school, first and second grade, were the Curious George books. And so I love the character Curious George because he was constantly asking questions, constantly learning about new things. And I became kind of a version of Curious George. And that's still embedded in my head today. I want to learn more. And you can't do it without books, Earl. You know, the internet is wonderful, but anybody can put anything on the internet. Doesn't mean that it's credible information just because it's on the internet. I'm not saying that everything out there is not accurate, but there's a lot of inaccurate information on the internet that people, you know, read and they think that, oh, this is true, without going and looking deeper, looking for other, you know, sources to provide evidence of the things that they've learned. Hey, you always have to look deeper.
Hey, Reggie, let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what, sir?
Oh, morning, Earl and Reggie. He reminds me of my place. It's got so many books that they're all boxed up, and it looks like a warehouse at this point. I've totally lost use of shelves. One thing I was going to raise, you know, I think I've mentioned on your show before, Earl, that part of what Trump is up to is he wants to take the money of America, and when he goes after these so-called woke agenda programs, he's stealing pockets of money. You know, if there's a pocket of money for school buses to, you know, to take people across town, and he steals that money, if there's money for just pick any issue. And he calls it woke, and he gets Elon Musk to seize that money. Then what happens to that money while it's in limbo? Well, there was a famous thing called the derivative scandal in the late 1980s, where some crooks made their way into positions of power, and I'm thinking specifically in Orange County, California, and the school district had a crook in as a treasurer, and overnight he would lend out the money to a Japanese bank, which is already tomorrow, and then he would lend that money for 12 hours. And so he could have the money back on the same day, and the books wouldn't reflect that the treasury had been looted.
So David, I wish I had more time, but thank you very much for that. What I want us to focus on is this is racism and the racial issues that exist in our nation predate Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And so if we try to lock this into Donald Trump, I think, Reggie, we missed the whole point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I tell people that this is not about Donald Trump. You know, these conversations are not about Donald Trump. These philosophies that are, you know, out there from, you know, the Republican Party of today are not the ideas that were out there and talked about from the Republican Party of 20, even 30 years ago. If you look back at history, you can look at every single presidential election, Earl. There is information about what they ran on, you know, what their campaign was about when they ran for president. If you look back, you'll see that the things that were on the agenda for Ronald Reagan when he ran for president in 1980 were not necessarily the same things he talked about in 1984 or 1988. It's constantly changing. And people have to take the time to go and look at these things and understand that these things that we're talking about predate, you know, Donald Trump or you know, MAGA or all of these things. This attack on these issues is a long-term attack, which started many, many years ago. And a lot of the things that you're hearing today, if you go back 60, 70 years ago, you hear the same types of things, even 100 years ago. If you look at conversations about immigration that we're having today, the same conversations were being had 100 years ago in this country, Earl. Immigration was, you know, a boogeyman back in the 1920s. In fact, we passed the strictest immigration law in U.S. history back in the 1920s. We passed a National Quota Act, which put a limit on who could legally immigrate to this country. Based on where they were coming from. And it ended up being something that had a tremendously negative impact on who America became. We stopped people from coming from, you know, wide swaths of the globe. But the main people that those people were trying to keep out of the country at that time, Earl, were people from Southern and Eastern Europe. They weren't trying to keep, you know, people from Asia out as much as they were trying to keep these specific white people out, because they considered them to be, you know, inferior white people. They weren't as good as the ones from Northern and Western Europe. And so these challenges are long-term challenges, Earl.
So Reggie, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, if we try to condense it down to the now, then you ignore all of this history that's behind these things, how these philosophies develop.
So Reggie, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes some time and effort to understand, Earl, that you have to see the big picture and not the small picture. You know, we have this right now syndrome in the minds of people. You know, we talk about what's happening now and we ignore what happened a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And we miss the big picture, Earl.
Do you think that at the root of this is white people of today had nothing to do with slavery? They had nothing to do with what took place, you know, back in those centuries ago. They had nothing to do with it. Do you think that part of the reason that this continues is because whites may feel some guilt connected to the horrors. And let's be clear that what took place in this nation was as horrific as anything that's taken place in any other nation's history. You can try to bury it all you want to, but those whites of today did not do that. But when you want to bury it, you know, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely, Earl. I think there's a level of guilt, a level of shame when people look back and understand the things that their forebears, you know, the people that came before them and their families did. I always tell people that for me, these things are always very personal, Earl. So when I talk about slavery, I actually have documentation of my family's enslavement in Mississippi. I know the family that enslaved my family in Mississippi. I know their entire family history. And, you know, I know I met a woman years ago who was a family member of the man that enslaved my family in Mississippi. And we had conversations about how she felt about, you know, her great whatever grandfather. And she told me she was very ashamed of what he had done. And she felt some level of guilt. And that was why she wanted to talk to me about it, get those things off her chest.
All right, 855-752-4842, Reggie Jackson the Grill. We'll continue the conversation. Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or the Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Right, welcome back to what is unfortunately is the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show today. My guest is the incomparable Reggie Jackson, historian, educator, and his accolades are far too many for me to, you know, spend any more time on. I want to go directly to the phone lines. I want to go to John from West Dallas. Good morning to you, John. You say what?
Hey, Earl. I just want to make a note that I think what's happening now is in our country, we forget that there's a lot of positive stuff going on between our diversity. You know, we're like a well-oiled machine. I go into the bank and I greet black people and they're warm and they're friendly and we make exchanges, and this is going on throughout the whole country. So I just wanted to state there's a positive element to what's going on. Even our buffoon president has a place in creating chaos that is going to be worked out to our advantage down the line.
So, John, you seem like a fair guy. Reggie, you want to respond to let's just accentuate the positive.
Yeah, you know, listen, we can't blind ourselves to the negative just by looking at the positive. You know, we love to talk about how, you know, there's good things that are going on. There's always good things going on in every society at every moment. There's good things and bad things happening at the same time. We can't ignore the negatives because they far outweigh the positives, in my opinion, right now.
Yeah, they absolutely do, John. And from the perspective of, and I'll say this quickly. So part of why, what was it called? Critical race theory. And all of these arguments that sprung up over the last several years and why we have to get rid of all of these things was because I would hear people say they make white children feel bad. Well, I can tell you that the other side of that coin, what's happening to black children. And so in order not to make white people feel bad, you can't sacrifice black children. It just does not add up, Reggie, does it?
No, absolutely not.
Especially when we're talking the truth.
Right. And, you know, we're talking about what white children are learning in school. And most of what people think they're learning in school, they're not learning in school, Earl. I can testify to that as a person who taught in schools for 8 years. And we can have a whole separate conversation about what people call critical race theory versus what critical race theory actually is. Critical race theory is never what people said it was.
We'll get into all those. I think you're on early next week as well. So let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Thank you for waiting, Cindy. You say what?
Well, I just want to say very quickly that Appleton had a store. It was called the Shenandoah Bookstore that unfortunately closed due to the fact that the owner had health issues. And he was a man from the Oneida Nations. And he had a lot of good books about Native history and pamphlets about Native history. And I think it's a very sad loss for our community because that is something we also need to understand and deal with is what we've done to the Native Americans.
I think that's Reggie, you want to respond?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I tell people that the most incredible thing that I've learned during the course of time studying, you know, all of these different diverse groups of people. I've studied African-American history, Native American history, Asian-American history, Latino history. I've studied the history of every group in the United States. And what I found is that there's a common thread wherever you go to study about any group of people that are not white, you'll find white people in those stories. We're in this together. We're living side by side every moment of every day in the United States. We've all been in this together in some capacity, but we're not taught to see the stories of certain people. For instance, when we go back to the Revolutionary War days, we're not taught to see what was going on with Native Americans at that time. We're not taught to think about what was happening to the 600,000 Africans who were enslaved at that time, because they were occupying space along with those white people that we read about in our history books. We have to broaden our perspective.
All right, Tom from LA, go ahead.
Well, we are all one human family. And I know the gentleman didn't mean it, but he said that he goes into the bank and they are nice people. That right there is racism because of the fact that we're all bleeding the same red blood and we're all part of the same families. And we can't look at each other as different or they or them.
But you know what, Tom? But you know what, Tom? We do.
Also, Earl.
Hey, Tom. We do. Okay? You can say that we can't look at things in that perspective, but yet we do.
Well, I think human beings are in denial. I don't think it's guilt. And I also don't understand why the NFL is getting rid of the end racism at the end of the
season. Hey, Tom, even if the NFL gets rid of the end racism at the end of the end zone, guess what? The fact that those words were at the end of the end zone didn't do anything to change race in this country. Thank you very much for the call. Reggie?
Yeah, that was a symbolic gesture that did absolutely positively nothing. It didn't change anything at all in American society, seeing those words in the end zone when you watch a football game. You were not paying attention to those words. You were paying attention to the game itself. And so from a symbolic standpoint, the NFL thought they were doing something special. And now they are capitulating to the current state of affairs and taking those words out of the end zone as if that's going to mean something.
All right, Reggie,
a very clear message.
Reggie, thank you, man. Just too short a time. I'll see you again next week. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. Up next, Jane Matinere, Greg Bach, Matinere on air. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We gonna stand up for
us. So you better get up. The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.